is Anna Heijmans, and I'm sitting here with my older sister, Zoe.
Hi.
And today we're going to be talking about meme culture, cultural capital, and what that means in our day and age today. So, I wanted to start with asking the most simple question of what is a meme? And how do we understand memes, and what do they mean to us? And I'll extend that question to my dear sister.
Hello. Well, I think first off, just brief introduction as to like why you're talking to me. I mean, family ties are easy to sort of capitalize on. But I studied anthropology, so I guess I have a bit of a I approach this topic from maybe like a different angle than you might. So that would make it interesting.
Exactly.
Conversation.
I think. I remember a conversation that we had a while ago about memes, and you drew a lot on. And on what you've also learned in your bachelor's of anthropology, and it really interested me because I have always approached this from a very objective.
I'm subjective.
I mean, well, yeah, no, not that. But like, I've always seen cultural capital, for example, from a very object-based perspective, and memes for me are just fun in free time. And you approach it, I think, more as really a social movement that can harm but also create.
Yes.
And that interests me quite a bit.
Cool.
Yeah.
So the question that you had, I think that you might be able to answer that better because you have more personal knowledge of memes. I think that I didn't really know the term cultural capital before you introduced it just now, because normally anthropologists don't approach the term culture as in a material sense or as like something that somebody can have or have less of or more of. So that's probably why we steer very clear of like terms like cultural capital. So I guess before this conversation, but I'm sure that I'll learn a lot today, I would have approached memes in a far more like sociolinguistic, theoretical sense. I probably liken them a bit to emojis and text speak, and sort of shape-shifting ways of communicating. Yeah, I think that I would probably approach it more like as a communication thing, but you go.
Yeah, no, I for me, my experience with memes, I remember actually the first time I heard the word meme was when I was watching a Smosh video, I think.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It was like, I was like nine. No, I was older than that. I think I might have been 12 or something. Smosh had a video of like, our editor doesn't know what a meme is. And I thought, shit, I don't know what a meme is. And so I had to click on the video and I had to educate myself because I was in love with Smosh. So I didn't want to disappoint them, you know. And then after that video, I still had no clue what a meme was. Just where I could go to find them. Because they had like all sorts of websites like, oh yeah, you find memes like via these people on like Facebook, or you find it like via this thing, or do you remember the show Equals 3?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
From such a long time ago. It was a guy who reviewed like
viral
videos, which
he
I think at the time
memes.
Yeah, memes and viral videos I think kind of overlap in a way.
Yeah.
Like Rick rolling somebody, for
example.
Yeah,
that's true.
But viral videos are a little bit different. But he would use a lot of memes in his editing.
Memes are kind of super like letting the most people in on an inside joke.
Yeah, I think actually that's quite a nice way of describing it. I think I think one of the breeding grounds for memes in the beginning a lot was, well, 4chan, but I was too young to really go on that. I think that's for a more older generation. 4chan, MySpace. No, MySpace was talking with people, right? I've never been on MySpace.
Yeah, we're too.
All these websites. I'm uneducated. I'm uncultured. I don't possess that kind of cultural capital.
The wisdom of the internet.
The wisdom of the internet. I think Tumblr was a big thing as well.
Mm-hmm,
for
that's
me.
True. I think it still is.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when I think that you and Phoebe educated me on memes.
For sure, yeah.
And especially Phoebe's. And honestly,
Phoebe, just for context, Phoebe is our younger sister.
Yeah, and she's like, she really should be here because this
yeah.
is her. Like,
she knows
communicates.
A lot.
I mean, normal people, sorry, I should. But like, most people, I guess, would engage in meme culture on the internet, but Phoebe's does so just.
Just as like
a
conversation.
Method of communication.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny. Because we still haven't really described what a meme is, actually. We've been...
Well, that's what I... Yeah, so that's
yeah.
why... Because when you guys tried to... or I remember, like, you guys were explaining what memes are, and then it was like, yeah, it's like a photo or like an image or something with, a, like, text underneath, and then I just didn't understand. I was like, well, what, that's, like, everything. And then there are like, these nuances. It's, like, this very distinctive... photo that's supposed to mean this one thing, and then you can apply different like contexts or scenarios onto it, and then it's supposed
yeah.
to also be funny. So like if you have like a baby that's holding up a fist, then that
oh, yeah.
in meme culture is I guess always like success.
Oh
and then you can like add different words onto it to have that sort of icon of success be applicable to different scenarios. But then
yeah.
because it's like a sort of it's like an icon that's kind of you only get it if you are literate in meme culture, so that's what makes it like an inside joke that you try to let as many people in on.
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of it's about finding something that's relatable but also very niche. Like I'm thinking of this video meme. It was a kind of like a video meme. It was a Vine video that went viral, and it was like it was a guy reacting to a meme, so it was kind of weird, but it was like watching this comic of like this terrible stick drawn comic of this guy lifting up his legs to lift up his blanket and then putting the blanket underneath his feet and then putting it down.
Yeah.
And then the guy's reaction was like, ha ha ha, I do that.
That I,
and that's it. It's just, it's basically a beautiful embodiment of like how memes work for everybody is
yeah.
the ha ha ha, I do that. I'm part of this club
yes.
that can react and relate
and
to
I can
this.
Initiate myself just by understanding what
exactly
being said.
Yeah.
yeah
I think it's interesting that before you use the word literate or literacy
mm-hmm.
in memes, do you see there's also like would you say that there's also a certain exclusivity in memes and in how memes are used and how they're evolving now?
I'm definitely not an expert on memes.
No,
so
no.
I don't know. I don't really like take everything that I say with a grain of salt.
No,
I think
that you come from an interesting perspective though.
Yeah, because I think that it really should depend or it really does depend on like the context in which they're used. Because I know that in the context, like for example, that Phoebe uses them, it is quite exclusive, as in it's like her way of communicating with her friends, and that form of communication really only works if you understand what she's
yeah.
talking about. Yeah, but then on the other hand, I think that because like meme culture exists on an open platform that everyone can participate in on the internet, I think that it isn't like exclusive in the sense that like only certain people can participate. But then on the other hand, you also have we can get more into that later. I think that there's like a very dangerous side to memes. I read a couple of articles on them and about like how it's gosh, I don't know how to explain this concisely, but 4chan has different groups that are very like consciously producing memes with a certain message, and because memes are not supposed to be taken seriously, but they are sort of implicitly, they're like social commentary on things. You can't criticize a meme for not being nuanced.
Yeah.
But it can also have really violent, like it can contain very violent sort of messages, and then there are these groups or these bodies of people that are consciously producing memes, for example, like the Trump campaign or whatever, just or like white
or
supremacy
Trump, yeah,
or
yeah.
sexist shit, I don't know. And I think that in that case, then memes are also quite exclusive because they're being used by a specific group to undermine another and to promote a specific message, and because you're not allowed to take them seriously. If you criticize them, then it's automatically like, oh, but you can't take a joke or whatever.
Yeah.
So they become a part of they become a really important part of a really violent conversation without while abdicating all responsibility to actually take part in that conversation.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's you put that really, really well. I think I'm thinking of a meme right now that went around. It's still sort of going around, of a boys' locker room versus a girls' locker room, and then the top image would be girls' locker room, and then it's text post, and so in the girls' locker room, girls are like, "Ooh, I hate gym. It's so smelly," and then something just extremely boring and. Dumb.
Okay.
And then the boys' locker room would be something like this really funny video of all the boys like dancing really weirdly or something.
Yeah.
And the thing is like it's simple. Like it's very simple in its approach of like but it perpetuates that message of boys will be boys and boys
yeah.
are so funny.
I have an even more blatantly frustrating example. It was two images, one on top of the other, and then the first one was like normal girls, and it was just a picture of a girl, and then like underneath it was it said feminists, and it was a picture of like. The Uruk-hai from Lord of the Rings.
No,
and
no.
I know, and it was just, and I was like, wow. And I think that there was like another bit of text, and I'm not entirely sure exactly what it said, but I know that it insinuated that like feminists are just angry because they're ugly.
That sounds so much like suffragette caricatures from
like
1900s.
Those rich, I know exactly
what
you mean.
Of women who are like, oh, here come the suffragettes, and they're all like these ugly, ugly, really old
yeah.
women who just want to like bother
the because
the
moment
people.
That you're ugly, you're useless, right, as a
yeah.
woman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh God, yeah. Actually, I feel like there are a lot of aspects to. Because the thing is, that meme, what you're talking about now with, like, normal girls versus feminists,
mm-hmm.
Is something that doesn't ever show up on my dash. And talking about that, I think that that's a nice way to segue into, like, how do we actually consume memes?
Yeah.
And how do we actually...
Well, just quickly coming back on this one thing, because I think that you can focus on, like, the perpetuation of these negative sort of conversations, but the opposite is also done, as in you have really feminist memes, but then they capitalize on the same structure, as in you can't criticize feminist memes without being an asshole,
yeah.
and you can't criticize sexist memes without not being able to take a joke. So they're really important parts of the way that we like structure our, I think, that the way that people structure a conversation in their heads, and because jokes are impenetrable, like you can't then they also create very like sort of rigid, well, this is just the way I think about things, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, but I think that so yeah, that structure kind of might work well for people like me who are feminists and
yeah.
like those memes, but then yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. No,
double-edged sword, I think, is that what
I was thinking, but I was also like going back on that, like there are definitely different cultures in which certain kinds of people can find the memes that are
yes
basically created for them. I think that there is, because just to go back a little bit more on what actually is the meme and how do we as a society see the meme. And I mean, last year in my big media class, we talked about memes as always having a grassroots startup.
Yeah.
I remember talking about you talking about that to you once before, and how I remember you taking issue with that because you said that that's not always necessarily the case,
no.
especially not anymore. And I think you see more and more now how companies are really capitalizing on meme culture.
Yeah.
And so we had like, there was like a moment between like in the, from the 90s to like, I would say 2015, where memes, well, no, maybe not even 2015, maybe not that soon, maybe 2010. And I could be very wrong, to be honest, I haven't studied the whole history of memes. But where memes really do have a certain grassroots startup because they become popular seemingly without formula.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I just looked up because I was curious, like, what was the first meme? Some people say it was this graffiti character that would appear across the world called Kilroy.
Mm.
And it would say Kilroy was here, and he had like this long nose.
Mm.
And it would just say underneath Kilroy was here, and that would be everywhere, and people were obsessed with it.
Mm.
And so everybody would be drawing these Kilroys as a humorous thing that you somehow knew about. And that again, yeah, it was another kind of grassroots startup that's sort of found a place in a collective subconscious of a group of people, or yeah, that as well. I think memes now,
they have a formula.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think memes can still fail.
Yeah, but they have there is a formula to which, because I know that what I talked about with that. Those different 4chan groups that are like consciously perpetuating memes to
undermine a certain group.
They have like a handbook on how to create a successful meme and what those look like, and there are like what people respond best to and not, and that kind of thing. And also, and again, don't quote me on this. Take it with a grain of salt. But I know that like just sort of the structure. So the spaces that memes sort of exist in or thrive in, like Instagram and
Twitter is mostly text based, but does have a lot of memes.
Facebook a little bit too. I think that the business model of those companies aren't are weird. because they take your sort of your personal information, and they sort of twist their platform to make sure that you click on the most things, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is really powerful for memes, as in,
I cannot express how much time I have wasted on Instagram, just scrolling. I remember when I showed you how to scroll through.
Yeah, I deleted my Instagram.
Yeah, because you spend so much time looking through meme after meme, and Instagram remembers what kind of memes I respond to, the ones that I save, the ones that I send to other people, that I find funny.
During the last season of Game of Thrones, I only had Game of Thrones memes.
Exactly. No, yeah, because it recognized, like, you click on an image, and if you stay long enough in that thread of images, because all of the images within that thread will be similar
but also like that whole structure of scrolling and like YouTube's auto replay, everything, it's like built, Silicon Valley has literally said, yes, we consciously built this platform to make it addictive and to make people like stay on it like as long as possible, and they're admitting to
a casino in your own home. But that also makes memes dangerous in the sense where it has this idea of like anybody can make a meme. It exists, like you have this image, and you can take it and you can change it and it mutates. Like the word meme, I wanted to say this earlier, but we got a little bit off track. Where the word meme comes from, a genetic term. About something that imitates itself or recreates itself and mutates as it does so. So it comes from the word mimetic, which I think is
what an odd. I did not like expect the internet world to be like
to be so cultured. yeah, I think that's also why the term cultural capital, when used next to memes, is a little bit questionable, because memes are seen as kind of like this dingy, kind of almost embarrassing thing, but it's not embarrassing when it's online, because online you can be celebrated if you made a dank meme, then you're celebrated. But outside of that online platform, like with our younger sister Phoebe, memes, it's kind of embarrassing to
we sound
to
so
be.
Negative to our
well
sister
no
today.
It's not
but yeah
it's not
I
what
know,
I mean but
no
but
we
I've
we
seen also
about...
like memes online where it's like you don't talk about memes outside of these platforms.
Yeah.
Not that wasn't funny. It was supposed to, like it was in a funny format of like what's
because we talked about that before the microphone turned on. But yeah, I think that because again, I'm not familiar with the term cultural capital and I don't like it really very much.
No,
but
I've discovered
it
as I was trying to learn more about it. It's really pretentious.
Yeah.
And really.
Yeah.
Blatantly elitist.
Yeah, but I think that the term itself like sort of allows for like not one definition of this is cultural capital, but like the if you approach it more as like a phenomena where people ascribe value to a thing, I don't know,
an object,
yeah.
or a way in which you speak,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Instead of trying to define what cultural capital is, take it as a phenomenon, then it might be like more useful. I'm still not like sure about that term, but I think that if you take that thing and you
actually, sorry, I'm just going to put in a little aside here in terms of, because maybe the listener would like to know more about what cultural capital is, because we did talk about this before the microphone turned on.
Yes, yes.
But cultural capital, from what we have learn together, is comes in three forms. There is embodied cultural capital, objectified cultural capital, and institutionalized cultural capital. And embodied cultural capital is cultural capital itself is expressed or seems to be this thing that a person can possess,
mm-hmm.
That
promotes social mobility.
Yeah, promotes social mobility and gives them a value as a cultured human being.
Yeah, like I think education was also a big thing.
Yeah.
But it's basically, it's like, or like, I mean, you can also, an object can possess cultural capital.
Yeah, so my book, if I own a book of Kant,
mm-hmm.
that is, it's an object of cultural capital that I
yeah.
have. That I own, that in turn gives me...
And then I think you being well-read would then also... I mean, it wouldn't be specific to an object, but it would be an attribute of yours. That
yes.
is... And I think that it was...
That's embodied
yeah.
cultural capital.
Yeah. And I think that was described as, like basically anything, any object or any sort of attribute or something
yeah,
that
or
is
your,
rare or
yeah.
wanted.
Or your bachelor's degree, for example.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Is an example of how an institution has expressed upon you that you possess cultural capital now through
mm-hmm.
this piece of paper.
Yeah.
And I think talking about cultural capital in terms of memes,
is
that interested me.
Yeah, because I think that what I sort of concluded was that on an online platform, when you have, because you were talking about these Instagram accounts that are super popular because they collect the best memes and then distribute these best memes, and I think that I definitely think that in that specific space, it could count as cultural capital just because these things are making you popular and wanted.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but then offline, I think that offline memes, I mean, especially if you look at like those corporations or companies that are using memes in like product, like advertisement or whatever, I think that there is a space for memes offline as well. I really think that any sort of social linguistic theory on like that would just be more valuable to sort of encompass what memes do offline. I don't know if they would like contribute to someone's
cultural capital.
Yeah.
And actually I think it's worth talking about memes online because or memes offline because there are a lot of cases, especially early on, like 2010s, early 2015s, whatever those years may be called. But there are a lot of companies, when companies use a meme in a commercial, for example, it automatically becomes cringy and cancelled.
Yeah.
Like, nobody uses that. Like, I think Burger King once tried to use a meme
mm-hmm.
in a commercial.
Yeah.
And online, everybody was like, okay, well, we can never use this meme again because Burger King just used it and it was cringy as fuck.
But then at the same time, Wendy's, like, for it becomes the meme.
Exactly. And so I think Wendy's was the first company online to really participate, to really get it. And I think that has sort of signified a turning point in how we... Because I think there was always sort of an idealist approach to memes. Also, how it has a grassroots startup, anybody can make a meme. It's very like communist in nature. Like it's very like everybody's equal on this invisible platform because you are also invisible. And I think we're realizing
but that's also kind of paradoxical, right? Because then if you have any meme that comments on anybody else, then if you say that everyone's equal and everyone's invisible, then that would also mean that you're untouchable and that you can just state things as fact.
Exactly, and you can't be held accountable.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something, because I think early memes, to be honest, were like pretty, you know, it would be like the
weird
face of a salamander. And it would be a salamander who's like, oh yeah, I got... some object today makes me happy or something, and you'd be like,
yeah,
"Hell
yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Salamander!"
Cats have gotten a
using
whole culture.
Lulz and just like completely butchering grammatic, like, or just completely making words strange. I don't know, and that's all pretty. Pretty playful and innocent, but I remember actually I once in the library there was in elementary school I went to go get a book and there was a book of cats and it was just full of printed memes and it was published like in Canada and just this book of like somebody had just went online, collected a bunch of cat memes, put them in a book and published it, and I feel like that signifies like the end of that cat meme.
No, cats are still so much a thing.
Yeah, but
and
not the Lulz cat.
The
Lulz cat is very cringy now.
Neon cat.
Oh my god.
But but cats have like their own language online. They have like their, it's like this odd sort of Soviet-ish weird.
Yeah. And the crying face cat as well. No, cats are forever.
Yeah.
But I think the Lulz or Hamburger's cat has ended. That's child's play now.
Maybe memes have to always be sort of like self-ridiculing or something. The moment that you publish it, it becomes like real, and then it becomes
serious.
Lame.
All of it. Like it becomes part of the institution. And I think memes are always meant to, like, I think the reason why Wendy's was so successful, for example, is because it seemed to speak outside of its own institution.
Yes.
And it seemed to be like, wow, this intern who got a hold of Wendy's Twitter just went crazy and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it seems to be run by one person.
Yeah.
And it seems to be somebody who has power and it's using it just to make people laugh. And that is why it is also, in a sense, grassroots, because it feigns that idea of this is not what the institution would intend. And this is an action that is outside of the norm, and that is why it's hilarious.
But then, assuming I'm like pretty gosh darn sure that it isn't one person doing...
No, probably
like, taking,
not.
Yeah. But then wouldn't that sort of solidify the fact that memes have a reproducible structure or like a sort of code that you can figure out and do?
Well, they've always been reproducible, but like in the sense, I think what you mean in the sense of
formula,
of,
that's what I meant.
A formula of how to take an image and how to make it popular, or how
yeah,
to
but
take
also,
it.
But also, I mean, a formula that is reproducible, I mean, by institutions.
Yeah.
So that there is a sense to, like, I guess, hack into that kind of.
But I think in order for institutions to create a successful meme, it must at the same time deny its inherent relationship to the meme.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I mean. Like, I'm assuming that Wendy's sort of approach was planned. I'm assuming that there was like there was sort of an idea behind it, which means that they got it. They got the meme formula.
Yeah. And I think also Apple earphones, like the wireless ones. They were AirPods. AirPods.
I think that you're right. I feel like AirPod is some kind
of.
Oh,
yeah,
like
that's a movie about a
dog.
Flying dog.
Yes.
Okay, no. Talking about something else. When they first came out, they were a huge internet joke. Like the whole,
they
were like,
stupid.
Oh my god, yeah, it was basically that. It was like, it would show pictures of people with badly photoshopped Apple earphones inside of there, and it would be like, and then like a train coming towards them at high speed, and it'd be like, Randy, watch out for the train. Oh god, he can't hear us. He has AirPods in. And then, like, you know, he'd die because of stupid Apple earphones. But then I noticed, because I look way too often at memes, but I noticed a significant shift at some point, because like there was a very clear method of like ridiculing memes, or
mm-hmm.
Ridiculing these Apple
mm-hmm.
earphones, which then almost in the span of like 2-3 days, suddenly it was a symbol of like being rich. Like, so there were memes of like, some like handsome looking guy
mm-hmm.
and some like ugly guy but with Apple earbuds, or like a frog or something with Apple earbuds, and people being and then automatically the one with Apple earbuds was better because it meant like, oh my god, that person's
rich.
So rich. And I think that was also I mean, there's no evidence for it, of course, but I always imagined that was something probably implemented by Apple itself. I mean, they didn't, I don't know, that's a conspiracy, maybe, but but I can imagine companies don't want to be ridiculed by memes online,
yeah,
because that's the
that
end of the company.
Kills them,
that
yeah.
kills them completely.
Because
so,
it's such a socially powerful
mm-hmm.
sort of language.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so if they can change their image, or if they can hire people to make memes about how rich Apple earbuds
well,
make
I know
you look
that, so
in a funny way.
I know political campaigns and like white supremacy groups or whatever, I don't know, there is a massive undertaking by these like sort of extreme groups to like produce and disseminate memes for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that it's that far off that companies would... approach it in the same way.
Because that's something like that happened on Facebook, right? Or was that like during the Trump campaign?
That's different. That was Cambridge Analytica buying a bunch of people's data and then having these.
And then targeting them with advertisements.
False
advertisements. So not, yeah, okay. So those weren't memes,
no.
But those were. But I think it could function in a very similar way.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And I don't think that memes are given the same like kind of... scrutiny as like a false advertisement would, because
yeah.
memes aren't like presenting itself as a fact.
Exactly, and a meme does not have an owner. Like
yeah,
with those advertisements, you could go back and that be like, oh wow, Cambridge Analytica,
yeah.
we gotta arrest you. Sorry,
well,
but like
Cambridge Analytica didn't run the ads, but
no,
yeah,
no.
they provided the data. But I know
they,
what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. But with memes, there's that yeah denial of ownership, anonymity. Which can, I think we're realizing now, can be quite dangerous. I think we've already known for a while that anonymity online in general can be very dangerous with online harassment and bullying. But I think
if you have anonymity in such a powerful sort of language, it's like an elusive language that some people possess, some people
mm-hmm.
don't, and like the majority of the people who get it can... Maybe, yeah, possess some kind of capital. I don't know
yeah.
if I would have it be cultural capital. But I think that anonymity in those powerful spaces are, like, makes shit go down. I don't know.
Yeah,
end that
yeah.
sentence.
Yeah, but also, cancelling culture.
What's cancelling culture?
Cancelling culture is, like, when a meme is cancelled, when a meme is not cool anymore, or when a meme
oh.
goes too far. Then you've got cancelling culture in which, like, this meme is not okay, and the meme is cancelled, or the person is cancelled, or
I cancel you.
Yeah, I cancel you. Yeah, and I think it can work two ways. I think that it can both anonymity can both be very troubling, you also have a very active online group that does hold the meme itself accountable, even if it can't hold the creator accountable. Mm. But again, it's a flowing thing that can go through all sorts of platforms, and there are many probably terrible memes that I know nothing about because it wasn't given to me by
Instagram.
because
these powerful maybe that's one of the things that might keep like the sort of essence of the meme away from like its root origins. I don't know, the spaces it exists on primarily cater heavily to the individual people who use that platform, so there's no way that all memes can get the same platform for that all memes are equal, because the platform doesn't allow that to be. That might
no,
be
yeah. We're going to have to cut this interview now. We're at our time. Yeah, sort of.
I think conversation
between friends. I think that's what I was going to name
yes.
the podcast.
Cool.
But thank you very much for listening. And if you have any questions or would like to contact us in any way, I can put my contact information down. Yeah, let us know if you have any questions or comments, or there's a lot more that can be said about memes. We definitely didn't cover it all, but
so
I hope you enjoyed the conversation nonetheless.
Give us criticism.
Yes,
we will
yes.
comment on it
yeah.
next time.
Perfect. Thank you so much, and have
Bye.
A great rest of your day.
Bye.